Welcome once again to Golf Connections here on the Golf Getaways Digital Network at PlayGolfGetaways.com. I'm Mitch Lawrence, glad as always to have you with us as we get ready for the playing of one of the most iconic events on tour, the RBC Canadian Open. I think it is altogether fitting that we have the privilege of the company of the most, and he's going to hate me saying this, but it's the truth, the most revered of Canadian golf journalists with us today. I'm going to paraphrase Bruce Daubig in the Globe and Mail in Canada in 2012 when he said, "We come to praise Lauren Rubenstein, who played the game for a lifetime, continues to play, covered the game he loves, and still covers it for 40 years, give or take. And along the way, gave and still gives us all some of the most intelligent, perceptive, and deeply thought-provoking insights we've ever had on our beloved game and those who play it, pro or amateur." For 33 years, Lauren covered golf for Canada's Globe and Mail. Brilliant newspaper, of course. He actually first retired in 2012. The readers stormed the Globe and Mail. I may be a little bit of hyperbole there. They stormed the Globe and Mail, demanding he come back, which he did. And then he retired again in 2013. The former and first editor of Score magazine, the golf magazine of Canada, author of numerous fantastic books. My favorite at the moment, A Season in Dornoch, having just returned from Dornoch in Scotland. I urge you all to read it. Winner of multiple Golf Writer Awards from the GWAA, member of both the Ontario Golf Hall of Fame and the Canadian Golf Hall of Fame, the recipient of the Canadian Sports Media Lifetime Achievement Award in 2009, and the George Cumming Distinguished Service Award in 2012 from the PGA of Canada. I know, Lauren, that you're sitting there going, wow, I have done a lot. You can find Lauren on Twitter at Lauren Rubenstein, LaurenRubenstein, or keep your eyes open online for stories that continue to interest him in the world of golf and beyond on any number of worldwide outlets. And it is absolutely, as I said, a privilege to have Lauren Rubenstein on with us today. Welcome to Golf Connections, Lauren.
Thank you, Mitch. It's really nice to be on here with you, and I've enjoyed getting to know you a little bit as well through our interactions over the last year or two, and I know we're going to have a good chat here today.
I think we are. Let's start with, you told me that you were out on the golf course today. Did you have a good time?
I did. Well, I play at this club called Maple Downs in just north of Toronto, which is about 60 years old. And Ian Andrew, who's really a fine architect here in Canada, and he's a great admirer of classic golf courses, Tillinghast, for example, Donald Ross, the usual suspects, Mackenzie, Stanley Thompson. And we brought him in a couple of years ago to propose kind of revamping and renewing the golf course. It's on a tremendous piece of ground, and we just wanted to make more use of the ground to get the running game going a little bit. So Ian came in and started the work last year. We closed up 9 holes around July 1st last year, and the other 9 on August 1st. And today was actually the opening day. The first day was the course was open. So I went out just after 9 o'clock with a few of my buddies, and the course is everything I thought it would be. It was always a good golf course, but he's made it, much more, stimulating would be the word, because you can use the ground now, you can bounce the ball around, there's fall-off areas around the greens, and which he's done simply by raising greens a little bit. He's opened up a lot of holes by taking out trees, which, of course, allows for a lot of better air circulation. So, of course, today was the first day. It just looks fantastic, and all of the members were very excited to get out there.
How great. It sounds fantastic, and I know you are obviously a huge fan of the ground game and all that that has to offer. So
I know you're going to have it. Especially because I can't hit it up in the air as far as I once could. So I got to use the ground.
Don't say that. That's funny. You know, it's all about what you got. Just go in there with what you got. I know you know
that's
that.
Right. I played with 7 clubs, and I walk. When I can walk a golf course, I'll usually take just 7 clubs. A couple of weeks ago, I played my favorite course in Canada, the Devil's Paintbrush, and I played it with 5 clubs in the book. Probably maybe the biggest wind I've ever played in. It must have been 40, 50 miles an hour all day. Holy and I had just a tremendous time, Today, my club choices on a few shots were between a 2 hybrid and a 5. So it was. I enjoy it. Some people look at me. Some people look at me like I'm nuts. A couple of the guys said, "I could never play golf like that." I have to have 14 clubs, and they're carrying their 4 wedges. And I'm always telling them, Tom Watson says, nobody who grew up without a 60-degree wedge should be using one. But, you know, people are beholden to equipment. They think they absolutely have to have the latest equipment and use it all. So anyway, I guess it's great that the game offers us so many opportunities to play it the way we want to.
I think that's true. And you're talking to a hickory player.
I know.
Who just got back from Scotland and brought seven clubs with me. Darren, our producer, the same. And so we always get strange looks. No matter where we go, we get strange looks. But I think it makes the game a million times more fun personally. So I'm with
you. I do too. You have to hit shoes, hit different shots. Yeah.
Let's get to the Canadian Open, the RBC Canadian Open. We'll start off there. And as I said, it's really a historic event. A lot of people, I think, just look at it as another event on tour. But those of us who are interested in the history of the game, this is the fourth oldest national golf championship in the world, all the way back to 1904 with the Royal Montreal Golf Club. Going back to Glen Abbey Golf Club in Oakville after taking the year off last year. And to me, a natural tie-in for you, for a few reasons, to your career at the Globe and Mail and more. Take us back, before we actually just talk a little about Glen Abbey, to 1980 when you caddied for the great Canadian golfer Jim Nelford, and the idea for a column in the Globe and Mail came to you. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I was a very avid Globe and Mail reader. My parents were newspaper readers, and the Globe was Canada's national paper. And I always felt that, there was room for wider golf coverage than just covering the major events and covering the occasional, tournament when a Canadian did really well. There really wasn't what you would call a golf correspondent, as the British called it back then. And I grew up reading, Bernard Darwin, Henry Longhurst, all of those fine writers in the UK. And I was going out to caddy in the 1980 Canadian Open, as you say, at Royal Montreal Golf Club, and I was going to caddy for Jim Nelford, who'd won the 75 and 76 Canadian Amateurs, almost won 77, and he led his BYU team. He was a captain out there, I think, for a while. He was and he won the Western Amateur, which is one of the major U.S. amateur tournaments. And I had met him in 1977 when I actually was playing much better golf, obviously, was much younger, and I went and played the British Amateur at Ganton Golf Club in Scarborough, England, and I met Jim there and was familiar with what he had done, so asked if I could join him for a practice round, and we did, and I got to know him then. And then when he turned pro not long after, I was still kind of hanging around school, working part-time for the Royal Canadian Golf Association, and I started caddying for him two or three tournaments a year. And in 1980, when I was going out to caddy for him in Montreal, I proposed to the Globe and Mail that I do an article from a column from a caddy's point of view. And the editor, Cease Jennings, liked the idea. So it was my good fortune, in a way, that Jim shot 68-70 the first two rounds, which put him in the lead, or right near the lead, enough that he was playing in the last threesome on Saturday with a couple of guys named Nicholas and Trevino. So it was a pretty good time to be starting a column. He didn't play well on the weekend, shot 78-74, but I still enjoyed writing the column. People read it. And then when I came back, I proposed to Cease Jennings, a sports editor, whose son, by the way, is now the superintendent at the golf course I play at. Talk about circles closing. But anyway, Cease, I said to Cease, I think golfers want to read about a lot more than just the pro game. I love the pro game, but they want to read about amateur golf. They want to read about architecture. They want to read about the literature of the game. They want to read about instruction, anything and everything. So I'd like to do, I propose just a general golf column for the Globe and Mail. And he said, oh, that's a good idea. And I started the next week, really. And that was 1980, and 33 years later, at the end of 2013, that was given the newspaper business. But I was always on a freelance basis for them, and it was a fantastic paper to write for, a real writer's paper. And I was really fortunate to catch on with them and have that as the core of my writing career.
Had you had any idea about writing before that idea came to you? Were you interested in writing about golf or other things?
Yeah, I remember when I was in grade 11, your teachers ask you you're old enough then, 16 years old, to start thinking about where you might be going in university. Maybe you've got some strong interests that you might like to pursue. And I remember an English teacher, her name was Nancy McKeon, and in our English class, she started asking everybody, what are you all thinking about doing, if you have any strong interests? And I said, I'd like to be a writer. I said, I don't know what I'd like to write about. I didn't really think about golf at the time, although I was playing junior amateur golf. But I'd like to write, and I don't know what. And the really enjoyable part of that is that years later, when I wrote A Season in Dornoch, the book you mentioned at the beginning in your intro, I looked up Nancy McKeon, and she was still alive. And I brought her to my signing in Toronto, downtown, and introduced her to everybody because she was such an influence on me. They talk about teachers who influence kids, and she really was. She encouraged me to write. I remember I wrote an essay for her called, oddly enough, Everybody is a Snob of One Kind or Another. I remember I wrote that, in which I was trying to say that in a 16-year-old mind that everybody has something that they feel they know strongly about, and they won't brook anybody else's opinion, and they're going to stick to that no matter what the facts are. And that's what I meant by a snob. And I remember she liked it and encouraged me. And I don't know if Nancy McKeon hadn't been there, if Cece Jennings hadn't been there as the sports editor at the Globe, who knows, what would have happened. But I had always liked writing, and I loved reading about golf. I really did, from a very young age. And that really, when the opportunities came along, I guess you could say I made them happen, but, the opportunities were, I was lucky to grow up in a time when golf writing was, kind of taken more seriously than it is now, when you could write long pieces, when you could write about more than the pro game, more than just the top players. And it was a great time to be a writer, and I was, it just kept going. One thing led to another.
Well, as I said before, I think the fortuitous connection was there, benefited all of us, certainly. Let's go back to, you were the first curator of the Royal Canadian Golf Association Museum and Library at Glen Abbey. So your tie to this great golf course is really strong, I would assume.
It is, yeah. And that was in the mid-70s, and the Royal Canadian Golf Association, which is now kind of officially called Golf Canada, but anyway, they were moving out to Glen Abbey from their downtown offices in Toronto. They just had offices down on, I guess you can call it, Toronto's Wall Street, Bay Street, and it was just a suite of offices. And I'd gone down there a few times, and I became aware that they were moving out to Glen Abbey, and I thought, well, I know that they've got golf memorabilia and some books, and where are they? What are they going to do with them? And I was also aware that out at the Abbey, which was an old Jesuit retreat and a beautiful old building that, of course, is still there, that there was a library in there, and I assumed that they'd want to use that library for their books, and also for there was a room they could use as a museum for their memorabilia. So I just went out there. I got myself an interview through a friend with the executive director of the Royal Canadian Golf Association, a gentleman named Bruce Forbes, and I proposed that I helped them, once they moved out to Glen Abbey, with organizing all of their books and memorabilia into some kind of coherent and cohesive fashion. And I said, I told them, you need a curator. I said, I have no background in curating. I did a master's in psychology, and I'm doing a PhD in psychology now, but I'm really interested in the history of the game and the Canadian side of it. And who's going to organize all this? So they gave me a job for 2 days a week, and that got me writing for the Canadian Open program in the mid-70s, and then that led to the, of course, to having some confidence writing. But my ties to Glen Abbey and to the history of the Canadian Open are really very strong. I used to caddy two or three tournaments a year on tour, starting with the Canadian Open, as we were saying. And I came out of retirement in 2004 to caddy in Dick Zokol, a Canadian who'd won a couple times on the PGA Tour. It was going to be his last Canadian Open, so I caddied for him there. And I'm looking forward to going back there, in a couple of weeks after the Scottish Open and the Open, the British Open at the Old Course. Although I'm not going out there, I'll certainly be following them closely. And then comes the Canadian Open. It's pretty good. You got three national Opens in a row, Scottish, British, and then the Canadian.
Yeah, it's a great stretch. Talk about golf connections. Richard Zokol, I actually played with him in a pro-am maybe twice, but definitely once at the Greater Greensboro Open.
And really? Isn't that
something? One of the great guys. Really, really enjoyed my time. Let's move from that and just segue to the kind of state of Canadian golf right now. Coming up at the Open, at the Canadian Open, you've got the highest-ranked player, Graham Dillette, David Hearn, who came so close to winning at the Greenbrier and is really, really playing some good golf. You've got any number of Canadian players, Nick Taylor, who's won, Adam Hadwin, Roger Sloan. Mike Weir is going to play in his 25th Canadian Open, 2003 Masters, 8-time PGA Tour winner. And, of course, the history of champions, when you look, And I hope people go back, as I said, and delve into the history of this great event. But the list of the past champions is really, really stunning. Arnold Palmer's first PGA Tour win in 1955, and the list goes on. The only Canadians, the last winner of the Canadian Open was in 19, as you know, I'm just telling our listeners, in 1954, Pat Fletcher. Was the last Canadian winner of the Canadian Open. And I'm wondering how you feel about the state of Canadian golf. A lot of great players coming up, and how you see them in terms of going into this year's Canadian Open.
Well, the state of the game at the top, if we're talking about professional golf at both men's and women, for both men and women, is pretty good right now. As you say, David Hearn came very close to winning yesterday, or came, you know, very close to winning in at the Greenbrier. Graham DeLatte, everybody, he's an explosive player. Everybody expects him to win soon. Nick Taylor won last fall. You've got Adam Hadwin, who has played some very good golf. So really, we wouldn't be surprised to see 6, 8, 10 Canadians out there on tour. I think there are 6 this year of the PGA Tour cards. Mike Weir is still certainly, you know, popular amongst Canadian golf fans. He's really struggled in the last couple of years, but working very hard on his game, and he never gives up. He's working with David Ledbetter now, and he'll be there at the Canadian Open. And on the women's side, it's been a little, you know, less obvious that there are good and talented young Canadian women out there. But I think just below the tours, you're seeing some very strong players led by Brooke Henderson, who has really been setting the golf world, ablaze this year, the women's golf world. And she's only 17 years old, and she's a tremendous player, 10th in last year's U.S. Women's Open. She's got an exemption into the U.S. Women's Open this week and the U.S. the Open Championship at Turnberry, the British Women's Open. So, obviously very talented. And then there are others, too. There must be 10 or 12 women who are Canadians who are playing on the Symetra Tour and doing well. A couple of them have won already this year. So the feeder system, I think, onto the LPGA Tour is going to be very good. I think we're going to have, before long, I'd say a handful, 5 to 10 on each tour, and all of them capable of winning any time. So it is an exciting time at the top of the game. As far as the state of the game itself, it's challenging as it is in the United States and elsewhere around the world because of economic realities and because of other things. It's harder to get younger people in the game, that sort of a thing. So that part of it is a challenge. Private courses are having to offer all kinds of deals, and doesn't make it easy for them just to continue in the way that they were structured. And public courses, there are so many good public courses right now, and the ones that are keeping the costs reasonable are still getting a lot of play. So that I'm glad to see. It's a great game, and I think it will always attract people. But, I'm sure they overbuilt courses in Canada as well. They were in the heady days of the 90s and 80s, and so there's some suffering going on there right now.
Let's talk about that. Golf Getaways is obviously a destination lifestyle golf site. All of us who are associated with it love to travel and play. I'm going to just start. And as I said, I got to play Glen Abbey. I absolutely urge anybody that's in the area up in Toronto to go and play it. Fantastic place. But there's no shortage of magnificent places to play all over. Cape Breton Island, our Golf Getaways team spent a number of days going around that fantastic spot. And we got to play, among others, Highland Links, Great Stanley Thompson course, and, of course, Cabot Links, which is now paired with Cabot Cliffs with Just Open. You wrote in about Cabot Cliffs early on in the Globe and Mail, and you also just posted a blog on Score Golf on your own history in Canadian golf, but it included this comment on Cabot Cliffs. Cabot Cliffs is sure to become a Canadian and even world treasure, an ideal companion to Cabot Links, the first and much admired course in Inverness. Just talk to us briefly about how you see what Cabot Links and Cabot Cliffs is going to do for golf travel, certainly in Eastern Canada.
Well, as Mike Kaiser, who's one of the main guys involved in Cabot Links and Cabot Cliffs, with the founder, really, Ben Calendar, a really smart, sharp, young guy from Toronto who lives out there and lives in Toronto as well with his family. But as Mike Kaiser says, you've got to have two golf courses, really. He says one plus one equals three, I think is the way he puts it. In other words, it really gets people going to a destination, which he's done with Band and Dunes, obviously, and now he's involved here as well with these two courses. And I think Cabot Cliffs, Crenshaw and Coore, when they were out there for the recent opening, said that a piece of ground like that may not come along ever again. And for somebody to say that, I mean, is quite something. And I walked Cabot Cliffs, the property, when I first wrote about it, and it was just under construction. Now it's done, so I'm looking forward to seeing it when I go out there in August. But I think it's just got everything that a golf course should have. It's got drama, it's got seascape, it's got also some more inland holes, it's got the ground, the topography, the contours, the the big sloping greens that can handle the winds out there on the Gulf of St. Lawrence. I mean, you've got 40 mile an hour winds, or let's go down even to 20, which might be fairly regular. You can get your calm days, but you're going to have plenty of wind there. You need big greens for sure, and you don't want the greens putting at 12 or 13 because they'd be unputtable. But it's just got everything, I think, that is going to draw people to Cape Breton, which is such a beautiful part of Canada anyway. It's rugged. It's got a majesty about it, driving the Cabot Trail, going to Highlands Links, and there are other golf courses that aren't as well known. Mm-hmm. And the people in Cape Breton are so friendly. There's a really strong culture there with the music and the writing. Anybody who is into fiction and hasn't read Alistair MacLeod should. I mean, his book, No Great Mischief, is, which has a lot of Nova Scotia in it, and Cape Breton, and also Toronto, and his short stories are tremendous, and you really have a sense of the land from his work, and that's what you get at Cabot Links and Cabot Cliffs. I mean, you're in a place that is very rugged. You know you're going to have an adventure. You get that at Highland Links as well, and Canada's full of golf courses, really, like that across the country. There are so many interesting places to visit. I could spend the rest of my life just visiting golf courses across Canada and haven't exhausted the interesting ones to play.
Well, pick a few of them because, like I said, and we don't need a lot of detail, but in the time we
Okay.
have left, because I think I said to Darren when we were talking about this before I started talking to you, I would think that you're among the most well-traveled Canadian golfers that in the world, I would think, given your career and every place you've been. So you mentioned Devil's Paintbrush. I know that's a spectacular golf course, but there's other
Yeah,
ones.
there's a place just north of the Devil's Paintbrush, north and west of that a little bit, called Osprey Valley, and I encourage any of your listeners to go online, look up Osprey Valley Golf, and there are three golf courses there that Doug Carrick designed, and each golf course is very, very different from the other. The Heathlands really evokes a British Heathlands course like Sunningdale or Walton Heath or the Berkshires, any of those. Then you've got two other courses which have odd names. One is called the Hoot and one is called the Toot because there's a railway running through there, a railroad, which isn't used too often now. But I have an annual charity tournament I've had for 25 years that I've hosted, and I've pretty much, I'd say 90% of the time, had it on one of those three courses. I think it's the best three-course public facility in North America. I really mean that. They're all in really,
Wow.
really great shape all the time. They're three very different golf courses, and they're just so enjoyable to play. And that would be the first place of the public courses around Toronto that I would encourage people to go. But there are others too. There's Eagle's Nest, which is a terrific golf course. I played with Stephen Ames a few years ago, and he thought they could host the Canadian Open the next day. I won't get into all the private courses around the Greater Toronto area because there are so many. I'm always having fun with my American colleagues and friends when they tell me Chicago is the best golfing destination in the U.S. and or New York, Westchester County, that sort of a thing. I always say, well, you guys should come up to Toronto. You wouldn't believe how many good golf courses there are here, classic architects represented. But getting away from Toronto, if you go out to, obviously to Alberta, you've got Jasper and Banff, and you've got another course called Wolf Creek, which is really good. One of the main guys involved in shaping the holes at Cabot, and actually he was the designer of Cabot Links, Rod Whitman. He did Wolf
Right.
Creek. It's really very good. And then you've got other courses in the Rockies, and then you've got British Columbia, where Dick Zokol works right now at a resort called Predator Ridge in the interior near Kelowna, and it's very good as well. So I really could go on and on about them. But if people, your listeners, want to travel to Canada, just do a little bit of digging beyond the obvious famous courses that we've mentioned. They're going to find a lot of golf courses they'll really enjoy playing at reasonable prices.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And I know, as I said, we could spend hours and hours. I am really impressed by what you said about the best three course public facility in North America. That's a big statement. That is a huge statement.
It is. And I don't say it lightly just because I'm Canadian or anything. I've been around and Bethpage might qualify in there as well. I think it's got five golf courses. It's state golf courses. But these are, they're an hour from Toronto, but they feel remote. A fantastic practice area. It's just so enjoyable playing there. And they're good tests. You can play them from any tees. You can play the ball in the air. You can play it on the ground. So, when you come up, Mitch, I'll take you there and I'll take you to the paintbrush sometime.
I thank you for your time. We'll be watching the Canadian Open and thinking about what you said. And it's been a pleasure. I hope it's the first of many discussions we can have.
Thank you, Mitch. It's been very enjoyable talking about this game that we enjoy so much. Take care, and I appreciate you having me on.
There he goes, Lorne Rubenstein. And when I tell you that you owe it to yourself as someone who loves the game to find whatever Lorne has written, be it columns or books, there's 14 of them. Pick up a season in Dornick. It'll move you a lot, as will all his writing. A truly, truly great writer and a fantastic guy. Lorne Rubenstein, at Lorne Rubenstein, LorneRubenstein is where he is on Twitter. And you can find out what he's doing online right there. Thanks for being with us once again on Golf Connections. A pleasure to have you with us as always. A lot more coming up here on the Golf Getaways digital network at playgolfgetaways.com. We'll talk to you soon. I'm Mitch Lawrence. So long.